So imagine you have hundreds of millions of dollars in back.
Okay, a pretty good start to any day.
Right. And you are ready to build a massive, hyper-efficient, totally green industrial facility right in the heart of New Mexico. You've got the perfect site picked out, your investors are thrilled, and you know the local community is just eager for the jobs.
Oh, they always are.
Yeah. But then you take this beautiful proposal to the bank and you hit this bizarre bureaucratic brick wall.
The dreaded paperwork.
Exactly. It's this legal catch-22 that effectively dictates that you can either get a local tax break to build this facility, or you can secure the green energy financing to make it sustainable. But under the current rules, you just cannot have both.
I mean, it is exactly the kind of paperwork nightmare that forces developers to compromise on their vision before they even pour a single foundation. You are standing there with capital to deploy. You're ready to build a facility that could completely redefine regional manufacturing. And a quirky legal contradiction forces you to choose between, financial viability and environmental sustainability.
Which is just crazy.
Yep.
So today we are unpacking how New Mexico just untangled that legal knot. We're going on a deep dive into a legislative fix that removed this massive headache and honestly unlocked a tidal wave of green industrial development.
It really did.
We're going to explore the actual mechanics of how this changes the game for corporate developers, how it's forcing a massive shift in the local labor market, and how it actively saves you the surrounding taxpayer money.
Yeah, that's the big one.
And we'll get into why it makes Sandoval County specifically a premier hotspot for corporate expansion.
It serves as this fascinating case study in how, a few small statutory adjustments can trigger vast macroeconomic shifts across an entire state.
Absolutely. And we have a great stack of fresh sources driving this deep dive today. We are looking directly at the actual legislative text of New Mexico's House Bill 165, which was signed into law in March 2026.
Fresh off the press.
Yep. We're also pulling from a May 2026 press release from the New Mexico Economic Development Department, alongside some strategic market insights from the Sandoval Economic Alliance.
Great sources.
So, just setting the stage here, we really need to look at New Mexico's overarching strategic goal because they are trying to scale up as a high-tech manufacturing hub, but without destroying their own resources in the process.
Right. It's like ambition is finally meeting physical reality. Because state leadership, they want the big industrial facilities, right? They want the
Yeah.
data centers, the advanced manufacturing plants.
Of course.
However, they have to attract that massive footprint without overwhelming an already stressed power grid, without draining their desert water supply, and most importantly, without putting the financial burden of new public infrastructure on the backs of local taxpayers.
Because taxpayers will definitely push back on that.
Exactly. They need this growth to be hyper-efficient, but they fundamentally need the private sector to foot the bill for that efficiency.
Right. So, to understand how House Bill 165 fixes this going forward, we really have to look at the absurd structural collision that was happening in the financing world up until May of 2026.
The clash of the titans, basically.
Yeah, we are talking about two incredibly powerful, totally different financial tools just crashing into each other.
So let's examine the first cool industrial revenue bonds, or IRBs.
Okay.
If you are a site selector or a commercial developer, IRBs are your primary mechanism for managing costs. A local government issues these bonds on behalf of a private company to help fund a new project.
So what's the actual perk there?
The primary benefit here is that it gives the company access to massive property tax abatements and significantly lower borrowing costs.
Okay, so if you're building a, say, $200 million factory, you're going to demand an IRB to offset your property taxes.
100%.
That's just baseline corporate strategy. So that is tool number one. Let's look at tool number two.
Right. Tool number two is CPACE, which stands for Commercial Property Assessed Clean Energy.
Got it.
This is a financing program funded entirely by private capital. It offers commercial property owners up to 100% financing for energy efficiency, water conservation, and renewable energy installations.
Which sounds amazing.
It is. And the brilliant part of CPACE is that you repay the private lender over a very long timeline, up to 30 years, through a voluntary special assessment on your property tax bill.
Okay, let's unpack this because on paper, these two things sound like a perfect partnership.
They do.
You use the municipal IRB to get the tax breaks to construct the physical shell of the building, right?
Yeah.
And then you use private CPACE financing to pack it full of state-of-the-art solar arrays and heavy industrial water recycling systems.
Exactly.
It sounds seamless, so why were they crashing into each other?
Well, it came down to a deeply technical question of who technically holds the deed to the land.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Under the old rules, to execute an industrial revenue wand, the local government had to hold the nominal title to the real estate. They are the municipal bond issuer.
Okay.
So technically, the city or the county, quote unquote, owns the property, even though the private company is the one leasing it, operating it, and eventually buying it back.
And private banks generally despise legal ambiguity.
Oh, they hate it. When a developer tried to bring in a private C-PACE lender to finance a massive green energy upgrade, the lender's legal team would look at the deed and just panic.
Why?
Because the collateral for a C-PACE loan is a senior lien on the property itself. But if the local government holds the title, the private lender has no legal clarity on whether they can foreclose or get repaid if the private company goes bankrupt.
Because you can't foreclose on a city hall.
Right. You cannot easily repossess a municipal asset. So consequently, lenders simply refuse to release the funds.
It's like renting a car from the city and then asking a private bank for a loan to put $1 million state-of-the-art engine inside.
It's a perfect analogy.
The bank is going to look at your proposal and say, if you stop paying us, we can't exactly repossess a car that is legally owned by the municipal government.
Exactly. And that dynamic forced developers into an awful choice. Do we take the IRB property tax abatements and build a cheaper, far less efficient building because we have to use our own expensive equity?
Or do we take the low-cost C-PACE utility financing to build green building but completely lose the municipal tax incentives?
Exactly. And when forced to choose between the two, developers almost always abandon the green upgrades to keep the tax breaks.
Enter House Bill 165. This legislation took effect on May 20th, 2026, and it fundamentally alters the math for commercial real estate in New Mexico.
It is an elegant piece of legislation because it resists the urge to create some massive new government subsidy program.
Which people usually default to.
Right. Instead, it just clarifies the liability. House Bill 165 simply states that the private lessees and the private property owners, not the local governments, are solely responsible for the C-PACE repayment.
Oh, wow. Just a legal clarification.
Yep. The municipal bond issuer, so the city or county holding that nominal title, bears zero financial liability. They do not pledge their municipal credit.
So the risk is entirely off the local government.
Entirely. The C-PACE security is clearly defined as a voluntary assessment lien that holds equal priority to a municipal tax assessment, and it falls entirely on the private operator.
So the private lenders finally get the ironclad legal security they need to confidently release the funds.
Yes.
Commercial mortgage lenders can look at an IRB-financed property, see that the municipality is shielded, and just grant consent for those C-PACE assessments to go through.
The statutory conflict is completely resolved.
Okay, I want to play devil's advocate for a second here.
Go for it.
Because if we think about the businesses actually renting these sprawling industrial spaces, they usually operate on a triple net lease.
Right.
And in plain English, that means the tenant renting the space pays the base rent, plus all the utility expenses, plus the property taxes. So if I'm the tenant and my landlord uses this newly unlocked C-PACE financing to install a $10 million smart HVAC system, that C-PACE loan is repaid via a property tax assessment. Doesn't that mean I, the tenant, am stuck paying my landlord's construction bill through my triple net property taxes?
It's a great question. And that scenario highlights the classic split incentive problem in commercial real estate.
A split incentive?
Yeah, which historically is what stalled commercial energy upgrades. Landlords just wouldn't upgrade their buildings because the tenant pays the utility bill. Why would a building owner spend millions on solar panels or insulation if the tenant is the one who reaps all the monthly savings?
Right. The landlord pays the upfront cost, but the tenant gets the financial reward. So nobody does it.
C-PACE eliminates this friction entirely. Yes, the C-PACE payment naturally passes through to the tenant via that property tax assessment.
Okay.
However, because the building just received a massive energy and water efficiency upgrade, the tenant experiences an immediate corresponding reduction in their monthly utility expenses.
Oh, I see. So their electricity and water bills drop the exact same day their tax assessment goes up.
You've got it. In highly efficient commercial buildings, the utility savings actively exceed the cost of the C-PACE payment.
That's incredible.
So even though the tenant is paying that new assessment, they're spending less overall on operating the building than they were before the landlord installed the upgrades.
It's a win-win.
It results in a net positive cash flow for the tenant from day one, while the landlord gets to modernize their asset without depleting their own capital reserves.
And we are already seeing this framework succeed in the real world. Looking at our sources, there's a really prominent case study involving John Murtaugh, the developer behind the Via Verde project in Bernalillo County.
Right, Via Verde.
Yeah. This is a massive 248-unit Wolgley gold rental townhome development. It holds the distinction of being the very first C-PACE transaction to close in Albuquerque and Bernalillo County.
Setting the standard.
Exactly. And Murtaugh specifically noted that this financing mechanism allowed them to manage those massive upfront construction costs while making the entire property vastly more affordable to operate over the long term.
Via Verde really proves the concept. Developers can construct high-quality, heavily fortified energy and water-efficient structures without destabilizing their financial foundation up front.
Right.
When a developer talks about their capital stack, which is really just the industry term for the layer cake of different loans, equity, and municipal bonds they use to fund a project, C-PACE slots in perfectly without disturbing the other layers.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me, though. When we discuss green energy upgrades, I think the immediate image for most people is just, you know, slapping a few solar panels on a warehouse roof.
Right, the classic image.
But House Bill 165 goes so much deeper than that. Looking at the actual text of the bill, the statutory definition of a quote-unquote eligible improvement is incredibly broad.
The scope is comprehensive. It naturally covers standard energy efficiency improvements, yeah. Upgrades that lower electricity and natural gas demand. But crucially for a desert state like New Mexico, it explicitly covers water conservation improvements.
Which is huge.
Massive. We are talking about heavy industrial water recycling systems. A factory can now finance the infrastructure to capture its own runoff, treat it on site, and reuse it for its cooling towers, drastically reducing its pull from the municipal aquifer.
The legislation even lists resiliency improvements. Like, the bill specifically calls out things like microgrids, heavy energy storage, alternative vehicle charging infrastructure, flood mitigation, advanced air quality systems, and this is wild, even commercial fire or wind resistance upgrades.
What's fascinating here is the sheer scale of modernization this unlocks. We aren't just talking about brand new constructions on empty dirt.
Oh, really?
Because of this dual incentive financing, older legacy industrial parks can now undergo deep energy retrofits without requiring a single dime of public taxpayer subsidies. The state C-PACE program, which is administered statewide by Adelante Consulting on behalf of the state government, has already supported over $146 million in commercial projects.
That is a massive influx of private capital flowing directly into the state's infrastructure. But, you know, that brings up a really crucial logistical bottleneck.
What's that?
Well, if we are suddenly retrofitting millions of square feet of industrial space with automated building controls, complex microgrids, and commercial water recycling plants, I mean, who is actually doing the physical work?
You are hitting on the secondary ripple effect of this legislation, which is a profound shift in regional labor demands.
Okay.
You cannot just hand a wrench to a traditional commercial plumber and ask them to integrate a low-flow industrial water recycling system into a factory's centralized automated software platform.
No, definitely not.
It requires highly specialized, technically fluent labor.
Right. Building a microgrid requires a completely different skill set than just pouring concrete or running standard electrical wire. But if New Mexico doesn't currently have those systems engineers, aren't they just going to outsource all these lucrative jobs to out-of-state contractors from Texas or Silicon Valley?
Well, local economic leaders are acutely aware of that exact risk. State projections indicate a very strong growth trend in technical roles specifically to meet this new demand.
Like what?
For example, math and computer occupations within the state are projected to grow by 10.1%.
Wow, 10%.
Yeah, these are the high-wage, highly technical roles critical for managing modern automated industrial facilities. They want those jobs filled by local residents.
But how do they actually ensure that happens?
This is where organizations like the Sandoval Economic Alliance, or SEA, come into the picture. They aren't passively waiting for a highly skilled workforce to magically appear in the desert.
Right.
They are actively coordinating with regional educational institutions to align local training programs with these exact emerging industrial requirements.
So they're essentially reverse engineering their local education pipeline based directly on the specific labor needs created by this new financing law.
Exactly. They are actively building a local pipeline of systems engineers, data analysts, and technical project managers.
That's smart.
The strategy is to ensure that as corporate developers utilize C-PACE and IRBs to build these massive tech hubs, the local workforce scales proportionately to meet the demand, keeping those high wages within the local economy.
Okay, so we have established how this benefits the developers who get to build without compromising. We see how it benefits the commercial tenants who achieve net positive cash flow on their utilities. And we see how it creates a pipeline of high-paying technical jobs for the local workforce.
Mm-hmm.
But let's look at the people who don't work in these factories and don't own commercial real estate. What does this massive influx of industrial growth mean for the average listener who just pays taxes in these municipalities?
Well, if we connect this private financing mechanism to the broader public sphere, it introduces a vital concept we can call municipal utility deflection.
Municipal utility deflection. Okay, let's unpack that.
Think about a massive new industrial park coming into a mid-sized town.
Sure.
Historically, bringing a facility of that scale online means introducing a massive new drain on the public water supply and creating a huge surge in peak load electricity demand on the public grid.
Right. It's a huge burden.
To handle that sudden corporate demand, the local municipal government usually has to spend tens of millions of taxpayer dollars to expand their public infrastructure.
Building new water treatment plants or upgrading electrical substations.
Exactly, just to keep the lights on and the water flowing for the residential neighborhoods.
But because of House Bill 165, these factories are now utilizing 100% private CPACE capital to build their own independent water recycling systems and their own isolated microgrids.
You've got it. When private capital funds those massive efficiency upgrades behind the meter, it removes immense strain from the public utilities.
That makes so much sense.
By drastically lowering the water consumption and reducing the peak load electricity demand of these sprawling facilities, it defers the need for those expensive public infrastructure expansions.
So if you are a local taxpayer listening to this, the local government doesn't have to raise your property taxes to float a $50 million municipal bond just to build a new water treatment plant to service a corporate industrial park.
Exactly. Municipalities can now redirect their limited public capital toward infrastructure the community actually interacts with every single day.
Like what?
They can spend that money fixing local roads, funding public safety initiatives, and building better schools, rather than subsidizing utility expansions for private corporations.
It is a compounding benefit for the entire region.
Mm-hmm.
And when we layer all these factors together, the newly unlocked dual financing, the proactive labor pipeline, and the municipal utility deflection, it zeroes us in on one specific geographic area that seems perfectly positioned to capture this growth.
Sandoval County.
Specifically, the Sandoval Rio Rancho metro area.
Yeah, the data clearly points to that region rapidly becoming the premier hub for high-tech manufacturing in the state.
The sources highlight a composite cost of living index of 87.2 for the Sandoval Rio Rancho metro area, and that's based on 2026 data from the Council for Community and Economic Research. To put that in human terms, how significant is that number for a site selector?
Well, since the national average is always pegged at an index of 100, an 87.2 means it is roughly 13% cheaper to operate and live in that specific area compared to the national baseline.
That's a huge margin.
It is. If you are a site selector for a global manufacturer, your entire job is minimizing long-term operational overhead. You are looking at a region that already boasts a low base cost of living, and now you can layer on this flexible dual incentive financing.
You get your IRB tax breaks to lower your property tax burden, and you get your private CPACE funding to install the technology that lowers your utility burden.
Right. The financial feasibility of executing a major industrial development in that specific corridor just goes through the roof.
And we are already seeing the sheer scale of what is possible under this new framework. The sources provide a massive case study here called Project Ranger.
Oh, Project Ranger, yeah.
This is a staggeringly large $220 million advanced manufacturing facility slated for Rio Rancho.
Project Ranger is really the archetype of this new era of industrial growth.
Mm-hmm.
It illustrates exactly why this legislative fix was so necessary.
How so?
Under the old regulatory framework, you know, prior to May 2026, a project of that staggering magnitude would have been forced into that terrible dilemma we discussed. To manage a $220 million capital stack, they would have fiercely protected their IRB tax benefits.
They have to.
But to do so, they would likely sacrifice the deep green technology, placing a massive long-term strain on Rio Rancho's water and power infrastructure.
But with House Bill 165 in place, developers behind massive facilities like Project Ranger no longer have to compromise their blueprints. They can fully utilize CPACE alongside their IRBs. They can finance commercial-grade solar arrays to handle their own peak electrical loads. They can deploy low-flow industrial water recycling systems to protect the desert aquifer. They can install smart HVAC infrastructure to minimize their natural gas footprint. They drastically lower the long-term utility burden on their corporate tenants while securing the long-term asset value for their private lenders.
They achieve full financial viability while actively preserving the public grid, conserving the region's scarce water resources, and directly employing a highly skilled, localized technical workforce.
So what does this all mean when we pull it together? By simply removing a legal friction point over who holds the liability for a property tax assessment, New Mexico has completely realigned the economic incentives of commercial real estate.
It's remarkable.
They have successfully brought together private lending capital, local